Welcome to episode one of Talk Central, South Africa's first business technology podcast, brought to you by techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm editor of Tech Central. I'm joined in the studio here by Candace Jones, Tech Central's deputy. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Duncan. Been a busy week, hasn't it?
It has indeed, yes. This podcast, in fact, is the first of a series we're hoping to do, and it's a good week, I guess, to kick it off with all the news that's floating around at the moment. The idea behind the podcast, perhaps before we get into the news, is to do a weekly show, quite short, probably 15 to 20 minutes, just looking at the big stories of the week through the Tech Central perspective, what we've been covering, what we thought were the important stories of the week, and perhaps a little bit of commentary around those stories as well. The big news that's obviously broken this afternoon, Friday afternoon, for those listening now, is the news that Jeffrey Hedberg has been appointed as the acting group CEO of Telkom, replacing Ruben September. I think this took everyone a little bit by surprise. The announcement came out in Sens at about 11:30 today, announcing that September was going to be stepping down several months before his contract was due to expire. Apparently, according to my sources inside Telkom, Ruben September has been suffering from ill health as a result of the stress he's been under related to the fights he's been having with the chairman of Telkom, Jeff Molabella. And I think he's quite keen to get out of there. I think he was quite devastated by the fact that the board, under Jeff Molabella's leadership, decided not to renew his contract. But there's been some interesting developments around there. Candace, you've just put together a piece, in fact, on the new appointment at Multilinks, which Hedberg was running for the last couple of months. What's your take on the situation?
He was also apparently with Jeffrey at Cell C, where he was at MD of one of the business units, and now with Jeffrey being under him as COO at Multilinks, he will now be taking over as acting CEO there. But this whole situation stinks up a setup, if you ask me. We were talking about this earlier. Well, I think Jeffrey was brought into Multilinks a couple of months ago. Not necessarily to head up Multilinks, but to be in place to act as a...
Jeffrey's been trading. He's been operating under a restraint from the Saudis, the parent of Cell C, Saudi Oger, for some time, which prevented him, I believe, from taking up a telecommunications post in the South African market. I guess the appointment of as acting CEO means that restraint is now lifted.
That restraint was lifted, I think, in November when his actual contract expired last year.
Okay, was there not an extension of that related specifically to the South African market?
Not that I know of. It could be. It could very well be something that we would need to check into.
Sure. So Hedberg's been appointed as acting CEO. Obviously, that's the Telkom board still needs to decide who's going to get the job full time. But there are a number of potential candidates. I know that Peter Nelson, in fact, I interviewed Peter Nelson at the time of Telkom's annual results, and he indicated that if the job was offered to him, he'd certainly be interested in it. The other person who stands out, but I'm not sure she really wants the job, based on discussions I've had with her, is Pinky Moholi, the current MD of Telkom South Africa. So there's some talent there. I'm guessing, and talking to some of the analysts in the industry, the view, I guess, is that Telkom really needs someone operationally strong now who has a lot of experience in the telecommunications industry. Internally in Telkom, I think only two names really stand out for me. That's Pinky and Jeffrey.
Well, I mean, you look at what Pinky's done over the last couple of years. Before even she came back to Telkom, she was working at Nedbank, doing some incredible turnaround work on the consumer face of that business. Mm. I know that Nedbank's praised her abilities, and she really did do a good job there. So, you know, she makes it...
She's well regarded. I mean, I even talked to quite a few of her competitors, and they speak quite highly of her, and I think she's actually gone out of her way to... I think the Telkom of old was quite aggressive towards its competitor/customers. You know, they had to work with and competed with companies like Internet Solutions and MTN Business, the old Verizon business. And I think in the old days, Telkom took a tough line with those guys. I think under Pinky, things have certainly changed, and Telkom's got a much more personable face now. And I think she's quite capable of running that company, but I'm not sure she wants the added problem of having to manage politics, which is a real challenge at Telkom, because you not only do you have to run the business operationally, but you also have to deal with the politicians, being a 40% owned state company. So it's going to be a fascinating one to watch to see how things develop there.
Well, speaking of Pinky, you had some interesting stuff happen this week. She revealed some interesting news about Telkom Mobile to you.
Yes, indeed. I had a very long, it was meant to just be a quick coffee with her, I think it was last week now, or earlier this week. And it ended up being almost about 2.5 hours of discussion and fascinating insights into some of the challenges that Telkom is facing around issues like regulation and specifically local loop bundling, which is coming up, and interconnection rates and all that sort of thing. But some interesting insights as well, which he provided on Telkom's plans to get into the mobile space. I know that a lot of analysts have expressed a great deal of anxiety, or they're concerned that Telkom shouldn't perhaps be getting into what they regard as an already mature mobile market. But she made some good arguments about why they should be in that space and the value they can offer. But I was really interested to see that they're also not only are they planning to target the obvious area, which is getting into the corporate market and offering bundled solutions and cross almost selling discounted packages of bundled broadband and voice services and mobile. But that they're also going to be focusing and taking on the incumbent operators head on in the prepaid market, which is a brave move, given that SIM card penetration in South Africa is sitting at something like 120% already.
Not to mention Telkom's reputation. Mm. But apparently, you say that Pinky, Mrs. Maholi has a resolution for that as well.
Well, the Telkom brand is going to be used in targeting the corporate market. But interestingly, the Telkom has decided not to use Telkom Mobile, which everyone was expecting would be the name, in the consumer market. And in fact, they're going to come up with some entirely fresh branding, which doesn't use Telkom's name, which is really, really, really interesting indeed. So it'll be interesting to see what their brand is. Apparently, they're down to a short list of two names, and they're currently before market research. And we should know in the weeks or months ahead, probably the weeks ahead, what that name is going to be. So definitely going to be an interesting one to look out for. So lots happening at Telkom, and I think the news is going to continue to develop on that front. Let's hope it's good news and not bad news, because there is a concern that, of course, the golden share, the so-called Class A shareholder, the government, which the special share in Telkom, which allowed it, gave it special privileges, including the ability to appoint a certain number of board members and name the CEO and have a say in the appointment of name the chairman and have a say in the appointment of the chief executive officer. That golden share actually falls away in May next year. And I do worry a little bit that government may in fact have been moving to, through its chairman, Jeff Molabele, a government-appointed chairman, may have moved to perhaps get rid of Ruben September ahead of the expiry of this golden share, so that they can put their own chairman in there and start to exercise control from that perspective for the next few years. So that is a concern. So I think we need to watch that. We need to watch the developments there very closely. But certainly, if they appoint Jeffrey Hedberg as the full-time CEO, I think that would be great news. I think most analysts and most telecom watchers would agree with that. Candace?
Definitely, but it's unlikely that will ever happen.
Why is that?
Well, firstly, it's the wrong colour and wrong nationality. As an American, it's unlikely that he'll be appointed as CEO. Unless Telkom actually turns its head and really thinks about its future, I don't think Jeffrey will be in there.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's a pity because he's really talented, and he proved his mettle at Cell C, where he came in and really took a moribund operation and shook it up and turned it around.
Cell C is not the only turnaround business that he's had. I mean, he's a history of turning around businesses. It's his thing. It's what he does.
Yes.
And Telkom could really use his expertise.
Yes. I do wonder if Multilinks, Telkom's troubled Nigerian business, did turn out to be a bit too much for him.
Well, I wonder how long they're going to hang on to that business.
One wonders whether Multilinks is, in fact, beyond saving. So there was more big news in the telecom space this week. Obviously, CECOM affected a lot of people. In fact, I think it was the talk of the town for the last few days.
Could it not be?
Candace, just give us a quick update again on what happened and the impact it had.
Well, CECOM went out on Monday, thanks to a repeater failure just off the coast of Mumbai.
Yeah, it was off Kenya's coast, I think. Yeah,
Kenya's coast. Mm. Yeah, that's right. Yes, and it's not the first time this has happened. A lot of companies have been relying on CECOM almost exclusively for consumer bandwidth sales. And
it's mainly the ADSL guys have been affected. The guys like MWeb and AfriHost and some of these smaller ISPs that that really wanted to come into the market with uncapped broadband and cheap per gig pricing that got these special deals from Seacom, but then they neglected to purchase or arrange redundant backups on SAT3 and other cable systems.
Well, yeah, and then I do feel for them because, you know, as you say, they are between a rock and a hard place because, you know, they did come in as the savior of South African broadband, providing these uncapped services, but without that redundancy, you know, the proof is in the pudding. South Africa was out of internet capacity for a week and still not up yet. So, you know.
I know a lot of people have been really heavy on MWeb, hard on MWeb and some of these other ISPs for not having a backup plan. But I don't know, I'm finding it quite difficult to be critical of them. I mean, they really, MWeb in particular came in and shook up this market, and it was a market that needed shaking up. We've had ridiculously high bandwidth prices in this country for far too long. MWeb came along and introduced the first relatively affordable, I say relatively affordable because it's still cheaper in many other markets, but the first relatively affordable ADSL broadband packages. And they've done this by going exclusively on the Seacom undersea system, and sure, there was a risk there. But I don't know. I just can't come down on them too heavily because they've actually shaken up the market. And you know, once the new undersea cables like Easy come along the East Coast and the new big pipes that are coming down the West, WAX and ACE, both of which have design capacities I think of over 5 terabits a second, this problem will be a thing of the past.
Absolutely.
So it was just unfortunate, I think, that Seacom happened to have this fault at the deepest point in the ocean where the cable system actually runs.
I think 4.7 kilometers.
4.7 kilometers down, and they're probably going to have to send down robots to find the cable because it's so deep. They can't use the normal techniques. So it's unfortunate it happened. It literally happened a month before Easy came on stream, and then it wouldn't have been an issue. I chatted with Brian Hurley, he actually, the president of Seacom, a couple of days before the Seacom outage happened, and he indicated to me that they were at that stage already in discussions with Easy about creating a redundant link between the two of them. So if Easy goes down, the Easy guys can use Seacom and vice versa. So it really is unfortunate that this happened just a month before the Easy system goes live. But it does show you that we need redundancy.
Absolutely, and I think Telkom has really had its fingers waxed on that one. SAT3 and SAFE have always been relatively well handled in terms of capacity. So, you know, it is a pity for Seacom, a little bit of a reputation bash, but as you say, I think of the past in the next couple of months.
Absolutely. Bring on the more bandwidth. What else has been happening this week? We've got a new ICASA chairman. That's pretty big news.
It is indeed. There are some concerns about him, a little bit of a mixed reaction to his appointment. Some people are very concerned about his age. He comes into his chairmanship at 70 years old. And
70?
Yes.
His name is Stephen Mpobe.
Stephen Mpobe, yes.
And he's replaced, of course, Paris Mashile, the very colourful Paris Mashile, who's ridden off into the sunset with his Shakespeare collection.
It was a fantastic interview.
You had lunch with Paris, in fact, earlier this week, and turned into a 7 or 8 hour affair, didn't it?
debating Shakespeare talking Roman history and his history, which is almost as bloody as Rome. So
yeah, Paris has had a really hard life. I know when he was first appointed at ICASA, I chatted as chairman of ICASA, I had a discussion with him about his struggle days. And it's a really horrible story, actually, about how he was tortured by the apartheid police and dangled upside down out of a window at John Forster Square in downtown Johannesburg, the old police headquarters.
Well, he couldn't even escape when he left the country to the homelands. They still tried to find him in the homelands as well.
Yeah, in fact, he went to Botswana and he was in Gaborone. And then,
he was a teacher there.
He was a teacher in Gaborone, and then he got out of the country 24 hours before his house was hit. Was it an ANC safe house or something like that?
It was an ANC safe house, and he actually fled to the US where he got yet another science degree.
Okay.
But more interestingly, Stephen Mpobe has already started in his position, spent the last week at a strategy session with the council. And hopefully we'll get to chat with him next week, but there are some concerns about him. Some are saying that he may not be able to hold up against what's coming, specifically with reference to the possibility that the DOC is looking for a little bit more control over the regulator and the regulatory environment.
Yeah, there is a concern that has been expressed that the DOC is hell-bent on reining in ICASA and undermining its independence. Certainly the DOC itself has obviously denied that, but do you think the appointment of Stephen Mpobe is with that in mind?
It could very well be. I don't know whether the DOC is banking on him to agree to everything that they say, or whether or not he will stand up to them. And that's something, you know, that will come over the next few weeks. We'll be able to see whether or not that's his position.
Sipiwe Nyanda, the communications minister, has never really struck me, and I haven't had a lot of dealing with him, but you know, through press conferences and just seeing what he does in the industry, he doesn't seem particularly Machiavellian to me. He does strike me that he wants the best thing for the industry. So does he really want to shut down, well, not shut down ICASA, but exercise his control over it? Or is it coming from the DG's office, Mamadou Pimothala?
Well, from what we understand, and this is actually only rumour at the moment, it appears that Mamadoupi is looking for a little bit more control. The word on the wire is that her failure at ICASA is pushing her to push the thumb into ICASA.
Okay, interesting. Well, watch the space on that one. The other big story today, in fact, was the news around the digital terrestrial television standards. And Candice, in fact, you went through to Santon this afternoon to meet with the Brazilians and to hear what they had to say about the ISDVT standard. Just a bit of background for anyone who's missed the story. South Africa is in the process of switching to digital terrestrial television from the analog standard. It's a process that all countries are busy going through. And it's important to do this because it frees up a bunch of radio frequency spectrum that can be used for deploying the next generation of wireless broadband services, such as systems based on LTE, which is the replacement to the current 3G networks that the cellular networks have deployed. And the Department of Communications threw a bit of a spanner in the works a few months ago when they called a symposium in Midrand to ask the industry what their views would be if South Africa were to abandon its decision taken back in 2006 to adopt the European Digital Video Broadcasting Terrestrial, DVB-T, standard and instead move to a version of Japan's ISDBT, or Integrated Service Digital Broadcasting Terrestrial Standard, which the Brazilians and several other South American countries have adopted. And there was great speculation in the industry then that the Brazilians have been lobbying hard and, in fact, may have offered certain inducements to the South African government for us to switch away from DVB-T. And the industry has become quite upset about this whole issue, to the extent of calling a press conference a few weeks ago, joint press conference by Mnet and ETV, to lament the situation and say it would be a disaster for the country if we adopted the Brazilian standard. Candice, you've been following the story quite closely. The Brazilians are obviously in town this week, and Lula da Silva is here to basically for the handover of the World Cup, which Brazil will be hosting in 2014. And he's obviously brought a large contingent of businessmen with him and advisors. What are they saying about the situation?
Well, I today met with the personal advisor to the presidency for Brazil, and he is... one of the questions that I really wanted answered was, what kind of investment has Japan made in Brazil since the country adopted the Japanese standard? And once again, the Brazilian contingent tried to skirt the question. I eventually got out of them that Japan had made investments into Argentina's TV channels, but not into Brazil's because, I quote, we didn't need it. So I'm still trying to figure out what it is exactly, you know, that will come of it if South Africa adopts the standard. But what Brazil says is that they already have put aside money in their own DTT budget to come to South Africa and start discussions on joint ventures and building set-top boxes and mobile TV devices on the ISDB standard, which strikes me as surprising since, there's no agreement being signed on whether or not to use ISDB. What is interesting is that the Brazilian DTT rollout is only at 62% of the country, and they started in about 2007 in the rollout of their country, although, granted that the country is quite large. But from what I understand, the ISDB set-top boxes have been difficult in rollout because they're quite expensive. And what they've done now is they're rolling them out directly in TVs, built into TVs, which is also an expensive operation.
Interesting. So the ASADEC ministers have asked or have formed a task team to look into the issue. And they're reporting back at the end of July or beginning of August and on their recommendation, and then the SADC region, and the reason the SADC is looking at it is there has to be frequency harmonization over this issue, because if one country goes for one standard, another country bordering it goes for another standard, there's going to be serious interference in the radio spectrum. So SADC is due to hear about the issue from this task team in the next couple of weeks, and the ministers will then be making a decision. So let's hope the right decision is made for the country.
Well, with any luck, the sway of countries that have already adopted DVB and have already started rolling out their DTT systems, countries like Mauritius, who are now 80% of the way through their rollout, hopefully that will sway the rest of the SADC countries into adopting the right standard.
I believe it. I know that Namibia has already rolled out DVB-T as well, and Tanzania, I think.
Kenya.
Well. Is it Kenya?
Kenya.
Okay. I think Tanzania might have have started a rollout as well already.
It's very possible. There are a couple of countries, and I do have a list, just not on me.
Sure. Great. Well, I think we're out of time. The idea is to keep this show short. Thanks for listening, and if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at info@techcentral.co.za. That's info@techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan MacLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. This is Talk Central, and check it out on techcentral.co.za. Thanks for listening, and chat to you next week.